Today's episode is brought to you by Canva. We're all looking for ways to make an impact at work, but not all of us are skilled in visual design. Canva helps you get your point across, simply and beautifully. It's easy to design Canva presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos. You start with a designer-made template and customize it with your content. Plus, add graphics, charts, and more from Canva's massive media library. Whatever department you work in, Canva is perfect for any task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets, and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Welcome to Brainstuff, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, Brainstuff, Lauren Vogelbaum here. As anti-Asian hate crimes have surged in the United States, Asian American scholars and activists have responded by speaking out about their stories, which have often been overlooked in textbooks. For the article this episode is based on, HowStuffWorks spoke with Gary Okihiro, a professor emeritus of international and public affairs at Columbia University and author of Margins and Mainstreams, Asians in American History and Culture. He said, "There are so many stereotypes and myths about Asians in America, and they really need to be disabused." According to the 2020 census results, 23 million Asian Americans in the United States can trace their ancestry to more than 20 countries, and many of these individuals have roots in the U.S. that span decades and even centuries. But Asian immigrants were denied citizenship for much of American history. Their American-born children were granted citizenship, but they themselves couldn't even apply. This dates back to the 1790 Nationality Act, which limited citizenship to only, quote, free white persons. But after World War I, many people, including Asian Americans, were seeking citizenship through the courts by demonstrating that they were white. Two of the most notable were Bhagat Singh Thind, a Sikh immigrant from the Indian subcontinent who served in the U.S. Army, and Takao Ozawa, an immigrant from Japan who had lived in the U.S. for 20 years. Both appealed to the Supreme Court on racial grounds. Ozawa argued in 1922 that he was white because he had adopted American culture. Then Thind argued in 1923 that he was Caucasian because he grew up in the Caucasus Mountains. The court denied both Thind and Ozawa's citizenship based on race. Yet their challenges show how Asian Americans resisted laws that limited their naturalization, believing that they were entitled to their full rights as Americans. Thind, who had served in the Army, eventually was granted citizenship in 1936 when a bill was passed providing citizenship to anyone who had served. But it wasn't until the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1952 that every Asian immigrant finally became eligible for citizenship under the law of the land. Okihira said, "Asians were not immigrants like Europeans, and unlike Europeans, were never intended to be citizens of this country by the founders of this nation. But despite all that, they stayed, and they made laws for them, and their children became American." Another battleground for rights took place during World War II. Following the bombing of Pearl Harbor, the U.S. government began to fear that Japanese Americans were enemy agents of Japan, even though two-thirds of Japanese Americans were American citizens, according to Okihiro. There was no evidence to support these claims, and decades later, Ronald Reagan would declare internment a mistake based solely on race, implicitly recognizing that these fears were rooted in racism. But at the time, as a result, the government ordered 120,000 Japanese Americans to leave their homes and relocate to internment camps under Executive Order 9066, issued by President Franklin D. Roosevelt. And as the war progressed, the government began seeking Japanese Americans from the camps to serve in the U.S. Army. The government presented residents in the camps with a loyalty questionnaire. Two questions, questions 27 and 28, were particularly controversial, asking Japanese Americans if they would renounce any loyalty to Japan and serve in the U.S. military. About 6,700 individuals, including a fair number of second-generation Japanese American men who became known as the No-No Boys, answered no to both questions. By answering no, they challenged the U.S. government for depriving them of their rights and treating them as enemies. Okihiro said, "The no-nos were responding to this illegal confinement of them. There was no reason given for their mass confinement. There was no justification for holding citizens within those camps." For their refusal, the no-no boys were incarcerated in a federal penitentiary at Fort Leavenworth for the duration of the war, according to Okihiro, who argues that their defiance showed they were true Americans. He said, "But what they were trying to do was to have the U.S. live up to its constitution and the promises afforded to all citizens. If that's not patriotism, I don't know what is." Beyond both of those examples, Filipino Americans played a key role in the labor movement in the U.S. Filipinos comprise the third largest group of Asian Americans. The Manila galleon trade brought indentured Filipino workers to Mexico, from where they eventually made their way to California, Louisiana, and beyond. Additionally, Filipino indentured workers, along with Chinese and Japanese workers, were brought to provide labor to sugar plantations in Hawaii and on the West Coast. Okihiro said, "Now, these workers who came to Hawaii and to the West Coast, over time, they began to see that they might want to stay here in the U.S. And when they did that, they began to demand rights." That led to the formation of unions, with Filipino farm workers like Larry Itliong and Philip Veracruz banding together with Mexican civil rights activists Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta to boycott non-union grape growers in the Delano grape strike. Thus, the United Farm Workers Movement was born. Leaders like Itliong went up and down the coast from the fields of California to salmon canning industries in Alaska to organize workers. Okihiro said, "This is an amazing thing, because agricultural workers were never organized by unions until Asians and Mexicans got together and formed those agricultural unions." Today's episode is based on the article, Five Things About Asian American History They Don't Teach in School, on HowStuffWorks.com, written by Tara Yard-Legata. Brainstuff is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with HowStuffWorks.com and is produced by Tyler Klein. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.